Shloshim Yom Kodem Achag. We are already within 30 days to Pesach, believe it or not, and we have the opportunity to start talking about Inyanei Pesach. So one of the highlights of Leil HaSeder is that we have a mitzvah to drink Dalet Kosos. Now, there are many mitzvahs on Leil HaSeder. The Vilna Gaon makes a whole category of listing of how many mitzvahs there are that are Midoraisa, how many are Midorabanan, and when you go through it, you realize there are so many mitzvahs that we do on Leil HaSeder. I think he has a list of over 60 or 70 mitzvahs that we do just on Pesach night itself. Again, some Deraisa, some Derabana, but it's unbelievable what an opportunity it is if you actually hone in and focus on what it is that we're doing. Now, one of them is the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. Says the Gemara Maseches Pesachim, Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. Every single member of the Jewish community has an obligation to drink 4 cups of wine on Leil HaSeder, and says the Gemara it has to be done Derech Cheirus. Derech Cheirus means you should do it as a way of expression, of showing that you are a free person. What are the 4 cups of wine connected to? Cup number 1 is the same cup of wine that we would have on any other Shabbos or Yom Tov. We know that we have a mitzvah to say Kiddush on Shabbos. We have a mitzvah to say Kiddush on Yom Tov as well. So the first cup of wine that we drink is simply because we have an obligation to make Kiddush on Pesach night, just like we have an obligation to do Kiddush on any other Shabbos or Yom Tov. The second one that the Gemara talks about is the cup of wine that we drink while that we hold or we drink while we recite the Haggadah Shel Pesach. The third is Birchas HaMazon. As we know, really, there's an obligation to have Birchas HaMazon al HaKos all the time. We don't always go out of our way to do that so much, but on Leil HaSeder, Derech Cheirus, we do it for Birchas HaMazon. And the fourth is Hallel. Now, why do we have cups of wine? So the Gemara assumes, in general, the Gemara assumes that whenever you have a cup of wine, it enhances the bracha that you are making. Anybody know when do we do a cup of wine just simply for an enhancement of the mitzvah that you're doing? Wedding. Let's say by a wedding or by a bris milah. Why do we have a bori priya guffin under the chuppah? What does that have to do with anything? I'm about to say harei mekudeshesli. What does the cup of wine have any connection to the harei mekudeshesli? The answer is the bori priya guffin will elevate the experience and say this is not just a ceremony of a chasen and kala exchanging vows. This is not just something secular that is, you know, one person committing themselves to another. This is something holy. And this bori priya guffin, this cup of wine, will elevate the entire experience, which is why we do it by a bris milah. Same reason why by a pidun aben, we say bori priya guffin as well, which seems to have no connection at all to the mitzvah that we are doing. And the answer is it really does not have any connection at all. It just elevates the mitzvah by reciting the bracha. So says the Shulchan Aruch, mitzvah livrar yayin tov lekadesh alav b'shabbos v'yamtiv. This is in Simen Reish Ayin Beis. That's Hilchos Shabbos, not in Hilchos Pesach, where the Shulchan Aruch says that whenever you say Kiddush, be that Shabbos or Yamtiv, or of course that includes Pesach, says the Shulchan Aruch, you should make sure to be borer yayin tov. You should choose a good wine. Now, what does a good wine actually mean? It depends who you ask. For me, I don't drink wine. So to me, none of this, right. So to me, Rashi is a good wine. Now, I have a very simple palate, so to me, you know, grape juice is the best wine you can get. But to most people who do appreciate wine, you have to ask yourself, what exactly does it mean when the Shulchan Aruch says you're supposed to drink wine? So the Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Pesach writes that there is a hiddur, there's an extra special reason why you should have not just wine, but you should have red wine on Leil HaSeder. What is that all about? Why should you have red wine on Leil HaSeder? Mishnah Berurah says, because we're supposed to remind ourselves, it's somewhat symbolic, it's representative of the fact that Paro spilled so much Jewish blood. When we drink the 4 cups of wine, we have the red wine, which reminds us of all of that blood that was spilled of all the Jewish children in Mitzrayim. Now, Rashi famously writes in Maseches Pesachim, what exactly is the idea, what is the intention of the Dalet Kosos on Leil HaSeder? Of course, we said each one has a specific portion of the Seder that it is related to, but why is it that we have 4? Why don't we have 5 or 6 or 7? Rashi says this is to remind us of what it says in Parshas Vayera of the Dalet Lashonos Shel Geula. It's interesting that that is so famous, but the Gemara itself doesn't say it. Rashi quotes it from Chazal, but that is not something that is quoted in the Gemara itself. It's in the Yerushalmi. So that comes from the Dalet Lashonos Shel Geula. The Mardechai asks a question where he wants to know if that's the case, that we base this on the Dalet Lashonos Shel Geula Votzesi V'Yitzalti V'Galti V'Lakachti. Then ask the Mordechai, why do you only have 4 cups of wine? You should have 4 cups, you should have 4 matzahs on Leil HaSeder. You should have 4 karpas. You should have 4 everything. If we're all trying to represent this idea of the Dalet Lashonos Shel Geula, then we should go out of our way to make sure that we have a lot of them. So I did see one time in the name of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in the Sefer Halicha Shlomo, which was put together by a number of his grandchildren. So in the Sefer Halicha Shlomo, he explains as follows. Why is it that we limit it only to four cups of wine and we don't have four matzos? Somebody actually just came over to me a couple of minutes ago, right before the shir, and he said that someone, I'm not even going to mention, Shame Rishayim Yirkov, but there was some person who wrote a whole article. He's not a... whatever. His article about this is one thing. He said many other things that are totally off base. But anyway, he put out an article that, of course, we're so distressed about the hostages and about everything that's going on now. And, you know, halavai, we should have the opportunity before Pesach to have a vinahapochu and to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's salvation. But if not, so he suggested, of course, we need to do something on Leil HaSeder to remind ourselves. So what should we do on Leil HaSeder to remind ourselves of everything that's going on? There are different things that people can come up with. Rabbi Rimon put out this week a beautiful idea, which was he composed a tefillah. Again, he's not saying that this should be a tefillah that will go in every sitter, but he's saying a nice tefillah where he put together his thoughts about what we should say on Leil HaSeder right before V'Yishe Amda. We should ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for a geula. We should ask the Ribono Shalom to bring a Yeshua. That's a very meaningful, nice, easy way to acknowledge everything that's going on and to remind ourselves of what it is that we should be thinking about, focus ourselves on where we're supposed to go. If anyone wants that, I think it's worth printing out. It's beautiful. It's not so long. Anyone wants it, I'm happy to send it to you afterward. That was from Rabbi Rimon this week. This individual had an idea that maybe it would make sense that every year we have three matzahs at the Seder. This year we should have two matzahs at the Seder to show that we're scaling back a little bit. Now, my question on that is, why do you pick on the matzahs? Why do you pick on the matzahs? People make a dinner for Leil HaSeder. People have a Yom Tov meal. Why don't you pick on one of the 17 dishes that you're going to be making for Leil HaSeder from all the different cookbooks that you bought this year? Why don't you say, this year, because of the terrible crisis in Eretz Yisrael that all of us are feeling, you know what, we're going to scale back the menu and we're not going to have six options for the main dish this year. We're going to only have 2.5. And why is that more appropriate? Because after all, the Gemara says in Maseches Baba Basra, Andaf Samach, the Gemara says that right after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the Jewish people said, we can't just go on with life as normal. That would be inappropriate. We have a Churban Beis HaMikdash in front of us. We remember what life was like when we had a Beis HaMikdash, and we know what's lacking now without it, says the Gemara. So they got together and they decided amongst themselves, we're not going to eat meat anymore because Karbanos remind us, meat are a reminder of Karbanos. So you know what, now that we don't have Karbanos, no meat. Along came the next group of people and said, oh, well, you don't have Karbanos, maybe we shouldn't have any wine because they used to have Nisach HaYayin on the Mizbech. So, okay, no meat and no wine. Then someone else came along and said, you know what, no bread because they used to have Mincha, a Karban Mincha. So no meat, no bread, no wine. Now somebody else came along and said, well, no fruits because they used to have Bikurim and no water because Nisach HaMayim. You're going to be left with nothing to eat, says the Gemara. That doesn't make any sense. You can't do that. Nobody can survive. But to do all of that would be inappropriate. That would be too excessive. Nobody's going to be able to survive. To do nothing is also inappropriate, says the Gemara. So what do you do? What do you do when you suffer through a Churban Beis HaMikdash? When you suffer through a time of tragedy, a time of destruction, and you know you got to do something to mark the destruction. You can't just move on with life like nothing happened, says the Gemara. You know what? Whenever you have a chasana, you should put dust, you should put ashes on the head of the chasana kala. And whenever you have a house that's being built, you should make sure to leave over a small space at the front of the house. And whenever you serve a big meal, says the Gemara, you should make sure to leave out one of the courses of the meal to show our meal is not complete. We can't be in a celebratory mood because we are lacking so much without a Beis HaMikdash. That's what the Gemara says. Now, I think the Aruch HaShulchan asked the question, we've all been to houses where they have a small space in the front of the house that's left unpainted. We've all been to a wedding where you see the Chassan and Kala have some ashes on their head. We've seen all the other things in the Gemara practiced even in our generation. How come you've never been to a meal where there's a sign on the table that says, you know, by the way, we left out this and this dish because we want to remind ourselves of Churban Beis HaMikdash? How did that get lost in the shuffle? Why doesn't anybody worry about that? So I think the Aruch HaShulchan, maybe some other, but someone from his generation, the Aruch HaShulchan, I think, writes, the answer is as follows. This is all a tangent. We'll get back in a second. So the Aruch HaShulchan says the answer is because when you put ashes on the head of a chasan kala, that's noticeable. That makes sense. When you are going to scale back on the painting of your house and make sure something's left over, everybody walks into your house, understands that there's something lacking because of a churban. What about when you're going to leave out one of the courses at a Shabbos meal? Says the Aruch HaShulchan, if you lived, I once went to New Square for Shabbos. Anyone here ever been there? Right? If I remember correctly, maybe I'm wrong, I think what they told us in New Square was, It's a very insular community. Everyone in that community is Hasidim of the Skver Rebbe. So in that community, everybody on Friday night has the exact same menu as the Rebbe serves at the Tish, correct? Same shape challahs, the same potato kugel, the same, whatever it is, everyone has the same thing every Shabbos that looks exactly the same. That's the way they do it. So, okay, so if you're going to be in a community like that, then if you're going to leave out the potato kugel, then it's noticeable that there's something lacking in your meal, because everybody in the town does that, you're not going to have it. However, in our community, says the Aruch HaShulchan, where we have a variety of different foods that people serve. Sometimes people start the meal Friday night with gefilte fish, and some people have it with fruit, and some people have it with salmon, and some people with something else. So if you're going to leave out the salmon, but you're going to serve something else, someone's going to think, okay, this person was in the mood to cook this week and not that. This person was in the mood to have fruit instead of having fish. Nobody's even going to question it. It won't even be noticed. So there's no point in doing it anymore. But Be'etzem, what do you see from the Gemara? The Gemara says that would have been a very appropriate way to show our sense of Churban. That would be an appropriate reaction. And I would say the same thing. To take one of the matzahs out of the Seder is not an appropriate reaction. Now, he's a big lamdin, this person. So he writes, well, you know that the Rambam writes you only have to have two matzahs anyway. And these opinions, a bunch, the Vilna Gaon and the two matzahs. So, yeah, that may be true, but if you believe that every year you're supposed to be having only two matzahs, then this is not noticeable this year, right? If you're from that school of thought of the Rambam and all those who follow the Rambam's opinion that you only have to have two matzahs on Leila Seder, that may be true, but if that's the case, then this is not going to be noticeable this year at all, so you're accomplishing nothing. And if you're from the school of thought that says that that is incorrect, that you should really have three matzahs at the Seder every year, then who are you to change the tradition, and there's a reason why we have that tradition of having three matzahs. It's not arbitrarily. There's a reason for it. The reason is, my father actually explains it, if you have the Haggadah Shel Pesach that they put out a few years ago from my father, I felt bad because many people saw it in the stores at the time, and they thought, wow, the Vertlach of Rav Shechter on the Haggadah, it's totally not. It's my father's Pesach Shiurim on the Haggadah Shel Pesach. So it's like a very Lamdasha Haggadah in English. So in the very beginning, he has a discussion about this, about what's the story with the two matzahs, three matzahs, why do we have two minhagim? He said, because we're conflicted here. On the one hand, because it's Shabbos and Yom Tov, you have to have lecha mishnah. You always have to have lecha mishnah. So you need to have two portions in order to be able to have lecha mishnah on Leil HaSeder as well. At the same time, the Gemara says, on Pesach, we try to have lechem oni. Lechem oni means a poor man's bread, which is broken. So we break the matzah, right? Now, if you're going to break the matzah, then you're not going to have Lecha Mishnah. Now, the Rambam holds, yeah, on every other Shabbos and Yom Tov of the year, you have to have two Shleimim. You have to have two full Challahs in order to have Lecha Mishnah. On Leil HaSeder, what we're trying to show is, we're not interested in having two Shleimim because we want to show this is Lechem Oni. We want to bring ourselves back to the experience of Mitzrayim. On the other hand, the other Rishonim say, no, you have to have two full matzahs in order to have the Lecha Mishnah, in addition to having a broken matzah in order to feel this sensation of lechem oni. Once you have both of those together, then you'll be able to have an experience of the Seder, which is appropriate. So there's reason for each of those opinions. My father gets into it in much more detail. I just gave the bottom line. But to come along and say that the way to exhibit our sense of loss this year is by taking matzah out of the Seder or taking one of the Dalet Kosas out. You know, this year we're only going to drink three cups instead of four. That's ridiculous. That's not what we're supposed to be doing. There are other ways to show. Why don't you take the idea that Chazal say? Why don't you take the idea of what the Gemara tells us to do when you live through a Churban? What do you do then? How do you react? How do you respond? So there are ways to do it. I think that would be the right way. Anyway, back to where we started. Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in trying to address the question of the Rishonim. If you're going to tell me that Rashi is correct, that Vodseisi v'itzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti is the reason why we have four cups of wine, then why do you only have four cups of wine? Why do you not have four matzahs at the Seder? Why don't you have other things that are also going to be four? He explains as follows. What is the understanding of Vodseisi v'itzalti v'ga'alti v'lakachti? Either you are redeemed or you're not redeemed. What does it mean? Oh, you know, you're now Vodseisi stage. Now you're v'itzalti stage. The answer is, I think the Torah Tamima writes on his commentary on Chumash, that there are different phases of redemption. Redemption doesn't always happen from one moment to the next. Sometimes that happens. But redemption in Mitzrayim actually meant there were different phases. There was a point of time when the Jews no longer had to work for Power Melech Mitzrayim. That didn't mean they were redeemed. It just meant they no longer had to work for him. Then the Makos happened. Then something else happened. Then they finally came out. Then they came to Eretz Yisrael, Ve'evesi. All of that was a process. I would venture to say, today, we are also in the middle of a process of Geula. Would you say that the Jewish people who have the schus, who have the privilege of living in Eretz Yisrael today, are nigalim? Are they a redeemed people? We don't yet have a Geula, unfortunately. There are many things that are not going right in the current state of how things are going in Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately. We don't have a government that runs based on Torah mitzvos. That means we're missing a major part of the Geula. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. We don't have Karbanos. We're missing everything about a Geula. So, can you say that that means we are still a downtrodden people who are still living in a Gullus mentality? Not necessarily. We're somewhere in the middle. The analogy that I see to that is the story of Mitzrayim. There were phases when the Jewish people had to live through different stages of that Geula. It didn't happen from one moment to the next. And the same is with us today. So said Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, when you want to try to feel that experience of something that gets better and better. Now, if you're going to sit on Leil HaSeder and eat four full matzahs, by the second matzah or the third matzah, you're not going to feel better about the mitzvah of eating matzah. You're going to say, okay, I think I've had just about enough. But if you are the kind of person that enjoys wine, by the time you get past the first cup of wine and it's a wine that you actually appreciate, and then you take the second cup, you say, wow, this is so good, I can't wait to have a third. And wine, your appreciation develops and grows more and more as you have more of it. And therefore, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, when we're trying to highlight the fact, the feeling, the symbolism of that magnified, intensified, enhanced expression of Geula, then you have to drink something that will highlight that experience. And the more intense I make my relationship with wine, the more I appreciate it. Now, again, that's talking about people who actually appreciate wine, so they want more of it. So says Reb Shlomo Zalman, it is not by accident, it is actually by design that we make sure to set it up this way. And I thought that was a very nice, very interesting interpretation. Of course, it's just a drush that Reb Shlomo Zalman has, but it's a very, very interesting one nonetheless. Now, the mitzvahs halayla, as we said, are, of course, Pesach, Matzah, Umarar. My father always likes to say, I mentioned it today, I was interviewed today for the Headlines podcast for this week that is going out, and they asked all kinds of questions about the Seder, but one of the things they asked was, like, what's your favorite Dvar Torah? It's very hard to say. I decided I wasn't going to prepare for this interview. Like, I didn't really want the questions in advance. I didn't want to prepare because I thought it's much better to be spontaneous. Like, I don't know, there's a million things you can think about when Pesach comes to mind. They told me, we want to interview about Pesach. I felt, all right, let me hear what his questions are, and let me just respond. To me, what? Rabbi Wasserman. So he's much easier. He's much easier. But So one of the things I said to him when he asked me, what's your favorite, you know, Dvar Torah on the Seder? I said to him, you want my favorite or you want the most important? There's a big difference. So I told him, I think the most important point of Leil HaSeder that my father really highlighted for us every single year when we were children sitting around the table, and now he says it in Hashir as well. He always mentioned to us the comment of the Menei Yisasar. What is the objective of the Leil HaSeder? Of course, we have to do the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim, but what are we trying to get out of it? What are we trying to give over to our children? Not just the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim. Of course, it's an important story, and we all need to remember it. But the Menei Yisasar points out in one of his Sfarim that what is behind the Sipur Yitzias Mitzrayim? If you look throughout the Haggadah, and you look with a discerning eye, you will notice that all 13, all of the Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah, are highlighted somewhere in the words of the Haggadah. And my father every year made a point to highlight those as we went through the Haggadah to show us where each of the Ikari HaEmunah are actually pointed out. So let's say you talk about one of the Ikari HaEmunah is that there is Schar VaOnesh. Schar VaOnesh means we all have a right to have Bechira, we all have a right to make decisions and to make choices on our own, but just understand that you're going to be punished or rewarded because of the choices that you make. Now, when you look through the Seder and you read through the Makos, you're not necessarily thinking about Schar VaOnesh, but says the Bnei Yisrael, that's exactly what it is. When you're realizing HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished the Mitzrim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished Paro Melech Mitzrayim and his entire nation, that is a way for us to highlight this idea of Schar VaOnesh. What does it mean to do something wrong, and what does it mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is watching you and that the Ribono Shel Olam is keeping track of everything that's going on and that you will have to pay a price for what it is that you do wrong? That's Schar VaOnesh. What does it mean when we say, Lo Kam Bi Yisrael Kamo She'od? What does it mean when we say in the Yud Gimel Ikari HaEmunah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who communicated directly with Moshe Rabbeinu? Yeah, we say it in the Ani Mamins, but when you look in the Haggadah and you see Vayaminu Ba'Hashem of Moshe Avdo, you realize that there is a place in the Haggadah where we highlight the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu singled Moshe Rabbeinu out to be the one to save the Jewish people. And all of the Yud Gimel Ikarei HaEmunah, if you look again carefully enough, and I think one of the important parts of Pesach is that we all need to be prepared in advance. You can't just show up to the Seder. My father once told us that the mitzvah is v'yigadot levincha. The mitzvah is not in the opposite, that your children have to teach you. Now, our children go to school, and they're much better prepared than we are sometimes for the Seder. And we show up at the Seder, and we don't know exactly what to say because our kids have so much to say, and we didn't prepare anything. So my father always said, the mitzvah is v'yigadot levincha. The parents have an obligation to educate their children. And therefore, we need to make sure that we are prepared. Part of the preparation can be just going through the Haggadah with this perspective, thinking before Pesach, as you flip through the pages of the Haggadah, where can I find the Yud Gimel Ikarei HaEmunah, and how can I explain that to my children in layman's terms? How can I explain to them that these are the principles of faith that we try for everyone to walk away with on Leil HaSeder? So I said to him, is that the most exciting Dvar Torah? Absolutely not. Is it the most important one? Probably yes. Probably yes. And I finished off that I said, my favorite Dvar Torah of Leil HaSeder is something that my father would actually never say. So what is that? My favorite Dvar Torah of Leil HaSeder is something that I saw in the Haggadah of Rav Avram Shur from Flatbush. He has a Haggadah called HaLekach VaHalibov, a lot of beautiful Svarim, but he has one on Pesach. I don't know if it's a Haggadah or it's Pesach and Yanim. I once saw in there an amazing comment that he has. How could it be you have such an exalted evening? You have an evening of Leil HaSeder where we talk about Emunah, we talk about Hashkafa, we talk about all the important values that a Jew needs to know and that he has to give over to his children, to his grandchildren, to everyone around the table. So why is it that we end off this night with this joke of Echad Miyodea? Echad Miyodea? Really, you're going to say this like cute little thing? Oh, who knows one, who knows two? What do you mean? How does that fit into everything we're trying to accomplish on Leil HaSeder? It doesn't make sense. So you may mistakenly say, well, we have a lot of things at the Seder that are really just lighter. We want to keep the kids engaged. We want them to be excited. So, you know, we're gonna eat the karpas. We're going to do this, take the kara off, put it back on. We're going to sing Dayenu over here, sing Manashtana, all different things just so that the kids should be engaged. Well, that really doesn't answer Echad Miyodea, which is at the very end of the Seder after the kids are already be sleeping. You did all the mitzvahs. So you don't need to keep the kids engaged at that point. So what's the point? Why do we have Echad Miyodea? Listen to this pshat. After I heard it, it changed my whole perspective of everything. And not only the perspective on Echad Miyodea, it changed my perspective on the whole Seder. What's the objective of the Seder? So he says as follows. For anyone who's in the field of psychology, let's say we have to make a character evaluation. We need to assess what kind of personality somebody is, for whatever reason. So how do you do that? I have no prior knowledge of who you are. I don't interview your family and friends, so how am I supposed to know who you are? So one of the ways, I'm sure there are many ways, one of the ways they do it is the Rorschach inkblot test. What is the Rorschach inkblot test? So they basically have a card that has splotches of paint on it that really don't represent anything. They have a little blue, a little red, a little yellow, a little different things that are just on these index cards. And they show it to the individual in question. And they ask them, can you interpret what it is that you see? Now, depending on what kind of personality you are, is what kind of interpretation you're going to give. If you have a very violent person, when they see that, they're going to say, oh, you see those two people have guns and you see the red splotch there is the blood all over the floor and you see somebody's hiding up in the green tree over there waiting to be a sniper to get... So it gives you a picture of what that person is. If you see a much calmer person who looks at it, they're going to say, oh, look at these two friends. One of them has red hair, one of them has black hair, and you see they're hugging each other and they're standing next to the park, right next to a beautiful tree on the swings. I don't know, they're going to make up a story that's much more in line with who their personality naturally is. Says Avram Shur, at the end of Leil HaSeder, we want to test ourselves to see how good of a job did we do this evening at all that we were trying to accomplish. So let's hold up a Rorschach test. What's the Rorschach test on Leil HaSeder? We're going to hold up the number one. And we're going to ask ourselves, what do you naturally think of when I hold up the number one? Now, on another day of the week, what you would think of when you hold up the number one is my one Tesla, my one vacation I'm going on, my one house in Florida that I own, right? My one carpool that I need to do today, my one errand that I have to run, my one store that I have to go to, my one bank that I have to make a deposit in. All of those things are the one that I would think of on any other day of the week. Now it comes Leil HaSeder, and I'm trying to figure out, when I hold up the number one, what do you think of? What do you think of? You know exactly what you think of? Only one thing. your one car in the driveway is not relevant, your one vacation is not relevant, your one house in Florida is not relevant. Nothing is relevant other than Echad Hu Elokeinu Shem HaShamayim V'Ha'aretz. And when I hold up the number two, what's relevant to you? On Leil HaSeder, the only thing I think of right now is Shnei Luchos HaBris. There's nothing else that matters to me in my life right now other than Echad Hu Elokeinu Shem HaShamayim V'Ha'aretz and Shnei Luchos HaBris. And that is the litmus test to see how successful were we on Leil HaSeder. How good of a job did we do on trying to understand what it is that we're here for this evening? Did you just run through the Seder to make sure that you said every word, that you did everything, that whatever it may have been? Or did you make sure that the Seder was a growth experience for you and for your family to the point that when you get to the end of the Seder, you can test anyone in your family and they will know the answer to these questions because it is so important to what the Leil HaSeder represents, and it's so obvious when they walk away that they have an enlightened emuna, an enlightened understanding of the Yud Gimel Ikari Emuna, because that's what the Seder is all about. And that's the way he explains what Echad Hu Elokeinu is all about. Fascinating. My father always told us, Echad Hu Elokeinu, he said that Rav Soloveitchik grew up in Chaslavich, which was very influenced by Chabad, Chasidus, and Chabad apparently doesn't, I don't know, I didn't look it up, but Chabad does not have Echad Hu Elokeinu. The whole piyut, they don't have it in the Haggadah. Why not? So Rav Soloveitchik said the reason why they don't have it in the Haggadah is because it's a mistake in the understanding of what Echad Elokeinu really means. Where does that line come from? Echad Elokeinu Shem HaShemayim V'Ha'aretz comes from Shema, where we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Echad. So when you say Hashem Echad, so you say, oh, who knows one? Hashem Echad, that's one. So Rav Soloveitchik said it's a mistake. When we say Hashem Echad in Kriya Shema, we don't mean God is one. It's not that we believe in monotheism. It's not what we're trying to say. The Gemara Maseches Brachos writes, what does it mean when we declare Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad? It means the Ribono Shel Olam is Yachid Umiyuchad. The Ribono Shel Olam is unique. He is different than any other entity that we are familiar with in the world. It is not a numerical value, Hashem Echad. It is the understanding of who the Ribono Shel Olam represents. It's Hashem Echad. And if that's the case, then it doesn't fit into the sequence. Who knows one? The answer should not be the Ribono Shel Olam. Because when we say Hashem Echad, that's not what we're referring to. So my father always used to say that because he said, we have a mitzvah in the Torah of Ve'alachta B'drachav. What does Ve'alachta B'drachav mean? Ve'alachta B'drachav means you should follow in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What does it mean to follow in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Says the Gemara, just like he is compassionate and caring and merciful and kind, we should be the same. And just like he goes to be Menachem Avel and Kovar Mesim, we should also be involved in the same thing. Okay. Excuse me. Very nice. But beyond that, Rav Soloveitchik said that when we talk about the mitzvah of Ve'alachta B'drachav, it means this as well. Just like the Ribono Shel Olam is Yachid U'miyuchad, and he understands that he is an entity that is like no other in the world, so too every human being needs to realize that he or she is also Yachid U'miyuchad, that there is something that I can accomplish in the world that is different, that is unique, that is not the same as everyone else's contributions. And that is something that I can bring to the story of the Jewish people, or I can bring to the story of humanity. That is our obligation when we say Hashem Echad. It reminds us, just like the Ribono Shel Olam is Yachid U'miyuchad in what he can accomplish and do in the world, so too we also have the opportunity and the obligation, the expectation of ourselves to be Yachid U'miyuchad in the world and to bring something special to the table, not only for ourselves, but for the community. What does it mean to be a Yachid U'miyuchad? It means there are certain capabilities, capacities that you have that somebody else does not. And that's an opportunity for all of us to think about when we say, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. So when you say, Echad Hu Elokeinu Shem HaShamayim V'Ha'aretz, that's what my father always reminded us of, that there's a question whether or not it belongs in the Haggadah or not. But even if it doesn't, to understand what the real meaning of Hashem Echad actually means and how it could be interpreted to the lives of all of us is something that is very, very important and a critical lesson of what Mahu Af Ata really means. What does it mean to emulate HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and how far does that expectation actually go for all of us? Anyway.